Dikas Chametz takes place the night of the 14th of Nisan, night before the night of the Seder. What's the purpose of the Dikas Chametz? By Torah law, there's no need for B'dikas Chametz at all. All you have to do is get rid of all your Chametz, either physically, by throwing it, and I would say it. What's the purpose of B'dikas Chametz? By Torah law, no need for B'dikas Chametz at all. All you have to do is get rid of all your Chametz, either physically, by throwing it out, or through the medium of this trick called Bittul. Bittul means either rendering it odorless, called Hefker, or Bittul means, in your mind, equating it with the dust of the earth. See, like, moving all of its importance. Either way, if bittul is done, there's no violation of what we call value raw, value matzah. You're not permitted to own chametz on Pesach. Either it's not yours, only if it's yours, there's a problem. If it belongs to a guy or all, there's no problem. Or because when you do bittul, it's like if you somehow existential, you burn it. Zap it. It's like dirt. You have to have to do it. So by Torah law, either bittul is enough or burning it is enough. There's no need for any bedikah whatsoever. However, the rabbis were afraid that if you burn it, you'll miss something. And if you do bittul, you won't really mean it. So then they insist that you do bedikah and beer as well. Okay, so if you will, there were really the three B's we have to be concerned with an Erev Pesach. What are three B's? Tzedika,
beer,
bittul. Correct. Even the right order. Go on that. It worked out. Tzedika, beer, bittul. The bees. Tzedika is done the night before Pesach, as we said, because that's when the people are home from work. That's when they can use a candle, which can illuminate every nook and cranny. Brach is named before the B'dikah. Interesting brach. Asher kesham v'sam tzivano al bir chametz. We're doing the first B, and we meant reference to the next one. Strange. The answer is that B'dikah, which is the first B, leads up to bir. One leads up to the other. So although the action we're doing now is the B'dikah, we make the brach based upon the final result, which is the view.
So why do they install the bracha being for the final act? Like the total final act, which is
that's not an action, it's a bracha. Shouldn't speak at the time you say the bracha, the time you begin the bedikah, and it's preferred not to speak in extraneous matters until you complete the bedikah, preferably. Rabbah calls a universal custom to put pieces of chametz out, so in case you don't find any chametz, otherwise it will not be a bracha levatol, of your chametz, not burning anything. Most authorities say it doesn't make a difference. As long as you did an honest search, if you found nothing, it's all right. The custom is almost universally carried out. The preferable way is that the person who's doing the bedikah shouldn't know where the pieces are. In my house, my wife puts out the pieces. I have to hope to get them all. Puts out 10 pieces, that's the custom. And some years I have to beg, where's the 10 pieces? I missed it. That's a good search. I mean, it's a good tonic search. I got all those pieces up. We're supposed to use candlelight as the Shulchan Aruch, as opposed to the light of the moon, as opposed to the light of a torch, because a torch, you're afraid to maneuver under the bed and in the corner, you're afraid to catch on fire. In my opinion, for this very same reason, nowadays you use a flashlight. People are very uncomfortable today, even with wax candles, which are not torch light. When I used to it, we never used candles at all, ever. Except for religious purposes, right? Shabbos, Hanukkah. We never used candles, we always used electric lights. When I used to it, that's a whole new world. In my opinion, that's better to use a flashlight. It's a better light, you can put under the bed without afraid of starting a fire. It's just a better way to go. Yes.
But when we do the actual bedika, we're not, I mean, it doesn't seem like in my house we're looking for chametz, we're looking for the pieces of bread that people put out.
Oh, so look for some chametz, and if you can't find any...
Well, that's what you do all before bedika.
Well, that's exactly the point. What happens in most bedikas today is that the committee, usually chaired by the Eish Haskayil, with the, what do you call it, Yerkat Pesach Blues, or something like that, she's already cleaned out the whole house. Not that much left. You're right. Still, it's appropriate that there should be an honest to goodness search. If there are pieces out there, you don't know where they are. So you look everywhere for them. Yeah?
Why shouldn't you speak until the end of the mitzvah?
Because you should better to avoid speaking in the time you begin a mitzvah until the mitzvah is over. Like by shofar, quoted. You make a bracha on the shofar, you're not supposed to speak. So they have to hold the blowing of the shofar is over.
But this bracha is really mean on the burning, so you really haven't come to
good question. She doesn't speak until you burn the chametz. Good question. I think that's too much to expect. Time is deeper for the night or the next morning. Too much. What's the rule of checking for chametz? Any place where chametz might have been brought in. That's the general rule. The particulars vary from house to house. No question about it. I've often said that a house that has children has a different shulchan aruch than one which does not. Because children can put chametz in the most amazing of places. About a few years ago, I went checking. I was once horrified. Sometime in we were checking for chametz on Erev Pesach, we went to the top of the closet, removed the box, and sure enough there was a peanut butter sandwich up there. One member of my family was a famous climber. I was able to get up to, I don't know how we did it. So I seemed to climb the sheer cliffs, and he got up there somehow, and he put it up there. Shulchan Aruch says shuls also require bedikah. Because kids bring chametz to shul. Pockets require bedikah. Unless you never put food in your pockets. Here's a big issue. How much of these bedikahs have to take place at the proper time? With the flashlight, the whole business. And my opinion is, only your residence requires bedikah the 14th night of Nisan with a flashlight. Other bedikahs, such as the shoes, the pockets, the car, the office, yes, bedikah is required, but it can be done at an earlier time. Not an integral part of the Takanas Chazal of Bedikah, which was limited to your home. That's what I think. Not everyone agrees with me, but that's what I think.
Yes.
We're up to have two residences.
Okay, so your dorm room, assuming you're required to check it, let's assume for the moment, you can check it whenever you please. But it's your official residence, you should try to check it the night before you leave the dorm. Whenever that is. If it's impossible to do it at that time, if you did it at a different time, it wouldn't be so bad. But it's considered a residence. So clearly, that's the problem. Is it really a residence or not? A pundit, I guess they can move from place to place. It's not a complete residence. Nevertheless, it's enough of a residence to try to do it the night before you leave. You never make a bracha except for the 14th night. So there's never a bracha when you leave early. Your dorm is closed by the 14th night. Yeah. Leaving them all the way in. So there's no way to make a bracha here in the dorm. After the Bidiki, you make a special pronouncement to all the chametz, which is in my possession, which I haven't seen, which I haven't burned, should be batel and should be like the dust of the earth. And some of the words should be hefker, like the dust of the earth. And it must be said in a language you understand. Why? Because it's not like the Mishnah Berurah calls, it's not a tchina, it's not a prayer. It's some abracadabra magic. No. Bitless renunciation. If you don't know what you're talking about, how can there be a valid renunciation of your ownership of the chametz? Not have to go in hospital, it's nothing. The Mishnah Berurah is kind as to translate it to Yiddish. Is there anyone here who knows Yiddish better than English? No, so I won't give you the translation. A second bittul is customarily done in the morning before the onset of the sixth hour of the day. Sixth hour starting from either sunrise or dawn, if it's dispute. An hour before noon. In that daytime bittul, we say all chametz, whether I saw it or I didn't see it, whether I burned it or I didn't burn it. In the first bittul, we don't say that. Because the first bittul, you're still holding on to chametz. You're still holding on to the chametz that you plan to eat for breakfast. I can say that bittul. So you only have a vat of the chametz that you don't see. But in the second bittul is a safety net. You have a vat of everything. Here there are the famous expression, you should not do the bittul by day until after you've burned your chametz. Why? Rekayim strefa b'chametz shalom. To fulfill the mitzvah of burning chametz with your own chametz. Once you did bittul, it's not yours anymore. So here we have the order. Bidika, then it's biur, then it's bittul. And the bittul must take place before the end of the fifth hour. Obviously, the bittul must, the beer must take place before that. The fifth hour, the average day is divided into 12 hours. Either from sunrise to sunset, as the Vilna Gaon would have it, or from dawn till the time when the stars come out, which is the opinion of the Mogen Avraham and others. So the end of the fifth hour is 1 hour before noon. Noon is the midpoint between sunrise and sunset. Noon varies from 20 to 12 to 10 to 12, standard time. Some years Pesach is daylight time, which would be 20 to 1 to 1 to 10 to 1. An hour before that, a relative hour, slightly more than an hour, that's like a metric, number something. Here it is, it's more than an hour. Before that, that's the time when the chametz becomes osur b'hanor, And once that happens, it's too late to do a bittul or a hefker. You have to do the bittul or the hefker before that hour, you have to do the beer before that hour. Now, the major monkey wrench is thrown into this entire process because of a custom which is practiced, again, almost universally. That is called Mechiras Chametz. We'll discuss later some of the details of Mechiras Chametz. But many poskim say that the beer should be done after the Mechiras Chametz. First sell, and then burn that which you excluded from the sale. 10 pieces in your paper bag, etc.
So
what you said?
I don't know. Yeah.
That's what I meant.
Okay.
Now the problem. When do you do the mechira? So most people don't do the mechira themselves, the rabbi does it for them. When does the rabbi do the mechira? He can't start the mechira until the time when people may no longer eat chametz. Or they'll be eating the chametz before they've already been sold to the guy. That's not right. I mean, you can get for permission, etc., but it's not really right. So we don't start the sale until the end of the fourth hour. You can eat chametz until the end of the fourth hour. So you have to do the mechira as quickly as possible. And towards the end of that fifth hour, when you can be confident the sale has been completed, then you have to burn the chametz. And then after it's burned, you have to say the ritual chametz. You have to pack in 1 hour three separate actions. One done by the rabbi, which is known as the sale, then the burn which you do, and then the ritual which you do, if you want to fulfill it in an ideal order. So it's ritual, it's Bidika, Mechira, Biur, Bidl. The last three all take place in the same hour. Yes, I'm sorry.
You already sold it, so what did you make it all?
Have you already sold it? Good question. Everything's sold. What's the problem? The answer is, just in case something went wrong with your sale, maybe you didn't really mean it, or maybe the guy didn't really want to buy it, maybe something went some snafu when the rabbi tried to sell it, he goofed something up. You never know. It's a safety net, I told you. Yes?
The guy
who permits
to come into your house and take the comments that he was sold to you?
Absolutely.
People do
that. We'll get to that later, we're not today. Major dispute exists. Following case. A person is leaving his house for the entire Pesach. They won't be there. This does not suffice to relieve him of the obligation of checking for chametz. Even if you won't be there, you still have to do a bedikah. As long as you're living in the house within 30 days of Pesach. It's so ridiculous. The family is going away to the hotel. So the balabas should have to break her back, checking for chametz. But according to what we said until now, she has to check anyway. Didn't leave a month before. It's an obligation to check before she leaves the house. Gevalt. Here the Mishnah Berurah has a dispute in the following case. When we sell chametz to the guy, we not only sell the chametz to the guy, we also rent out the premises that the chametz is found to the guy. we have to show this kind of stuff still. Since we know in advance if someone is going away for the entire Pesach, the possibility exists to rent the whole house completely to a non-Jew. And in that case, perhaps the obligation to check for chametz. Always, if it's, you're not, it's not going to be yours over Pesach. So you rent it out to a guy. But some say, it depends when you're renting it to the guy. If you're renting it to the guy before the time of Bedikah, okay? Some say. Not everyone even agrees with that. Okay, many say. If you're first renting it out, as is traditionally done, the next morning, Erev Pesach in the morning, it's too late. How can you fail to do the Bedikah the night before based on projections, based on plans for the future? You've got to sell the... You're going to rent the apartment out to the guy. Who said you're going to do it? And you plan to do it, but who said it's going to have come to be? So for this reason, it's preferable for those who wish to leave their apartments for the entirety of Pesach and thereby to exempt themselves from the obligation of selling chametz, of checking for chametz, rather. It's preferred that they rent out the apartment before the time of the sale. Excuse me, before the time of the Bedikas chametz. Before the time that the obligation of the deacon sets in. That means that on the 14th of this, rather on the 13th of this, in my community, we sell chametz to the goy twice. Because the regular sale takes place at the beginning of the fifth hour, Erev Pesach in the morning. And then there is the early bird sale. The early bird sale takes place the late afternoon before the 14th of this week begins. Interestingly, this early bird sale was originated because of those of my people from my Kehila who fly east. They fly there to Israel to Europe to Pesach. For them, my regular sale is too late. By the time I get around to selling my chametz, which is in the morning in America, for the afternoon in Israel or in Europe, too late. Can't sell the chametz after sometime before 11 o'clock standard time in New York. At that time when I sell the chametz, let's say 10 o'clock, it's 5 o'clock in the afternoon in Eretz Yisrael. So if my balavos is living in Eretz Yisrael at the Pesach, so when his 11 o'clock came around, it's all over. Too late to sell it. That's not what originated this extra sale. Sell for the early birds, for those who are Europe and Israel, so we sell to the guy in an earlier hour. Once we included this earlier hour business, for those who are going to Eretz Yisrael, we also included this very same sale, all those are going to the Pomelac and the Granite and the Caribbean, and where else they go in this part of town, this country. Because even though there's no time zone problem, it's all the same time, but they don't want to check anything. And according, we've mentioned before, according to some authorities, if they didn't do a mechira before the onset of the obligation to check the chametz, they can't rely on the future tense that the rabbi is going to rent it out to the guy. How do you know it's going to happen? So therefore, again, there are three opinions. Some say even if you sell it on the 13th, it doesn't matter, you still have to check. And some say if you even sell it on the 14th, you still don't have to check. But there's a significant body of opinion in between. If you rent out the house on the 13th, there's no need to check. On the 14th, there is a need to check earlier. So in order to satisfy this view, we try to sell the earlier for these people. For the people who want to get rid of the whole, to rent out the whole house and not check anything, as well as for the people who are flying east. Yes? Some say that no matter what you do, as long as you've been there for the 30 days before Pesach, you must check your whole apartment. you're allowed. Others say that even if you sell on the 14th, you still don't need the check, because you can rely the previous night on the future expectation that the chametz will be sold, that the heir will be rendered to a non-Jew the next morning. Yet others, the middle Jew says that if you rent it on the 13th, you're okay. If you haven't rented it yet, even though you expect to rent it on the 14th, you're not okay. It's the in-between view. We try to satisfy that view by selling the, by renting out the places on the 13th for these people. Yes?
So if you have someone, if you're going to go away and someone rents or sells your apartment house on the 13th, do you technically have to be out because it's not really yours now?
Good question. Good question. Well, we have a nice guy in, who's called John Brown, who we sell the chametz to in Riverdale for many years already. 20 years almost. So we tell him sometimes, you know, Mr. Brown, they're renting it to you now, but a few stragglers may still be around. Would you mind if they hang out a little bit there? And he says, I don't want. Yes?
When you're selling just your food or your chametz, how is it put to the guy? What do you say, I'd like to sell you all my food?
No, it's all the chametz. It's all the food.
Okay, and what... And is it ever a problem finding guys to do this? And if so, do they always sell back?
They don't have to. They can keep the chametz on the way back. No problem.
Do you understand what's going on?
That's the problem. You see, I have to say that many sales that I hear about, I'm very leery. I'm not happy with the way they take place. Sometimes they'll sell to a Spanish-speaking superintendent who doesn't really know too much about English language. Certainly knows very little about commerce and less about chametz. So, and I don't like that. I try to sell to a guy with the following pluses. Number one, he's intelligent. Two, he speaks English. Three, he knows about business. He knows about buying and selling. Four, he's an expert in real estate. He knows about different intricacies, which we'll discuss later. Five, he's rich.
What?
Why must he be rich?
What is he going to do with it?
No. This way, in case he decides he wants to buy the chametz, doesn't want to sell it back, he can afford it. You know, it makes the sale sound, you know, stronger. So John Brown fits the bill. Yes?
Well, how is this legal? Like, we have this, like, kosher restaurant in Boston that normally is owned by a Jew, and it has, like a top, you know, mashgiach, and was very respected. Yet during Pesach it's open because they sell it to a guy. But how do you make sure it's still kosher when you should get it back? Like, he can do anything he wants to it.
Right.
The mashgiach can't work, like, during Pesach because he can't get benefit. Like, so how is that possible?
I imagine that they rely on the fact that the goy is not going to do anything different than that week, that's done all year. Maybe send a goy to check, that's what I believe. Maybe Jew can check certain things. They can check the records, the invoices, you know, there are ways. Okay, is this clear? Yes?
I don't understand the whole concept of because I when I thought it's about the comments, I know that no guy is going to come into the house and actually take the cereal out of my cabinet and eat it. Isn't it fooling yourself?
No. Not at all. The sale is a perfectly valid sale. It's sold to the guy. The guy has the option, if he wishes, to come in and get it. It doesn't count.
No, but if you've been telling him to leave here for 3 years, you know he's not going to come into the house and sell. And everybody who's selling it knows, that, I mean, they know the concept behind it, but they also know at the same time that realistically, 99% he's not going to come to the house.
It could be 99.9% he's not going to come to the house. It doesn't make a difference.
Why?
I sold it to him. It's his. He now owns it. After Pesach is over, he has the right, even during Pesach, certainly after Pesach has the right to come and pick it up and take it. Only one thing, have to pay for it. No. Not at all.
I've been through it. Yeah, I just went through it.
What?
I I learned about it in my first time.
Okay. No problem.
No, I just feel that it's like you're tricking yourself.
No. Not true. You're selling it to... That's why my guy is the best guy. I think I'm going to vote my guy for the best and the fewest numbers in the world. He's a real estate guy. He's a business. He knows about certain contracts that are made in the business world where you sell something to somebody, even though you know full well he'll never live in that house. He's only buying it in order to unload it, make a profit on it, so he's buying certain commodities. I'm just giving you examples of the business world. The fact that you're not using it is in no way indicative of the fact that you don't own it. People do it all the time. They buy things, never use it, and then they can even sell it back and make a profit on the deal. It happens all the time. People are buying and selling and buying and selling for a weekend. They'll buy bonds over a weekend, let it mature in their bank, and take it the next week. That's all the time this way.
Yeah, but you know in the back of your mind that you're not coming into the house.
So what?
It's pre-planned
that after Pesach he's going to come and say, I have no money, I want you to sell it back to me. I want to sell it back to you. Fine. Without a pre-plan, you're not even going to tell him that if you want to sell it back to me, I'm likely to buy it back. It's nothing. It won't pay for 10 days, and that belongs back to me. Not even a problem. As long as the sale is done properly. We'll get to the details later. That is done.
He bought it with money?
Sure. We'll get to the details I said there. Okay. Okay, let's go back. Here we go. What if I have a goy's chametz in my house? Big problem. If I have some responsibility for the chametz, and the chametz is in my home, I may not leave it there. Because the combination of my being responsible, plus the fact that it's in my home, those factors combine to demand that I eliminate it.
This doesn't refer to what you call, to like, you own the house and a goy rents like an apartment for it.
We assume that that's a different case. That's considered to completely belong to the control of the person who rented. What is chametz? We'll get to the sale. What is chametz? What does chametz mean? Everyone knows chametz. It means it comes from the five types of grain, wheat, etc. And it's mixed flour with water, let it rise, boom, becomes chametz. What if it's a mixture of chametz? Chametz together with chocolate, chametz together with eggs, or any other such product. It's called ta'arubas chametz, a mixture of chametz. So it's a big problem. Ta'arubas chametz is you should get rid of it too. If needed, you should get rid of it.
Most of the things we have are for...
Okay. Unless it's inedible. If it's inedible, like paint. It's not because it's just inedible. It's just permissible. Nothing more leaving in the house. Yes.
How come that doesn't apply to like shampoos and makeup?
You said it doesn't.
Like why do people buy for shampoos and shampoos?
I don't know, beats me.
Like I've seen my friends go through with all the social products.
I don't see why. I don't think that's there at all. Any soap bar you want, any shampoo cream you want, they're all
one. When they have, they contain that shampoo
alcohol. I don't care what it contains. It's sure. It's not edible. It's not a food. Even a dog would eat it. Yeah.
I'd have to eat it out loud if the dog would eat it and then you have it, but so you wouldn't need it for the cat?
Could be, but the dog wouldn't need it.
What about things like alcohol?
Oh, that's a different story.
So you wouldn't need it?
Well, you and I wouldn't need it. Let's go down the block, about 10 people would love it.
I mean, not straight alcohol.
What about perfume?
Isn't there a difference between rubbing alcohol?
Lipstick is no problem. What?
Isn't there a difference between rubbing alcohol and other...
Rubbing alcohol?
Like there's certain alcohol...
Any alcohol. Some alcohol that not common at all.
Okay.
There are two kinds of alcohol. There is grain alcohol and synthetic alcohol. Those are the two main kinds that we deal with. Synthetic alcohol is no problem. Grain alcohol is a very serious problem. If it's found in a liquid form, we are afraid that this grain alcohol with a little bit of tinkering can become something which can be consumed by a alcoholic. Alcohol is the favorite of alcoholics. And there's too numerous here too. You've seen them around. Yeah, I'm sorry.
I've heard that like when I come to shampoo website, then it's not if the criteria isn't that if the dog wouldn't eat the shampoo, but if the dog wouldn't eat any one of the ingredients in the shampoo. So if like alone the alcohol in the shampoo, the dog would eat, then the whole shampoo is not for shampoo.
Little grants. People want to be strict, you know, pace it. I'm going to strip the pace. So I don't care. When it comes to liquid, I think Rabbi Blumenkranz is correct. You have to be very careful not to just consume anything. But Rabbi Blumenkranz did a lot of research. I think he writes the SD40 alcohol, something like that. Which is about the most common form to see all these liquids is synthetic. I think that's what he wrote. Just check before Pesach. Yes?
You
said lipsticks, you know,
but do you
have to wipe off
your top?
I think it's common, it's on top of your lipsticks, you wipe it off.
Well, lipsticks are made out of, like, membrane,
they're coming in, you put it on your lips. Why not? You eat
your
lipstick.
Yeah.
Yeah? Then you can't do it. Perfumes are a very serious problem. The list of 100 perfumes that are kosher to Pesach, at least. They have a list before Pesach, some they put out by the Cola from Los Angeles has a list, that's the best list. LA Cola. Is that my best. That has a list of 1,000. And every Blue Book has 500. And then the OU has their 100. Everything. It's an incredible number of products that are listed, and almost all of them are kosher to Pesach. There's so many perfumes, so many mouthwashes, so many liquid deodorants, and liquid. There's so many products that are kosher to Pesach. Who needs to start up with the other ones? You may ask, why are people so strict on Pesach? They only want to have kosher to Pesach shampoo and kosher to Pesach bar of soap. What is so ridiculous? The answer is nothing. Almost nothing is ridiculous on Pesach. Shulchan Aruch quotes the custom of the people who would actually peel off the walls and the chairs. They would peel the wood off, they'd sand down the wood. And Shulchan Aruch comments about it, well, it has a basis. I mean, it has a basis. I mean, don't laugh about it. Don't make fun of it and call it a minig shtus. No. There's a basis for, you may not do it, but there's a basis for. The same thing with the soap bars and the cream shampoo. I don't think you need kosher to Pesach, but don't laugh at those who are strict. I'm sure you can make a case for it. I want to explain to you one very important thing. Bidikas Chametz, we spoke about earlier, as evidence of here the simon, you're looking for large pieces of chametz. Size of a kazayin, size of an olive. You are not looking for crumbs. People confuse Pesach cleaning with spring cleaning. And they break their back and they blame it on their own. Well, don't blame it on me. You break your back upon Pesach, don't blame it on me. You're not required to pick up every crumb. If you leave the crumbs there, it's not even a problem. You're looking for a piece of chametz this big. I recommend a beautiful article by Rabbi Scheinberg, Shalim, from Adnistar, where he writes that the women shouldn't get so excited about the B'dikas chametz. They run themselves ragged, looking for chumras, and they're so tired and exhausted when Pesach comes, they collapse, and they cannot fulfill the mitzvah of Simchas Yonim. We spoke about it weeks ago. The Simchas Yonim is the mitzvah in HaTorah. All these crazy movements by B'dikas chametz are not even required at all. So they're trading in a real din for nothing. Mashu is in your food, not on the floor. Not everyone agrees with this analysis, I can see, the Chazon Ish is against it, but so Rabbi Schonberg was right. Erev Pesach falls on Shabbos, and that's a humdinger. It happened when? A year and a half ago, right? Correct? The whole business, that's a very complicated deal. What do? What's complicating is that Erev Pesach, you're not permitted to eat matzah. It'll compromise your excitement for the Seder. Erev Pesach, after 10 o'clock or so, you're not allowed to eat chametz. So what do you do with the Shabbos meals? Compounded is the paranoia of many balabusters. They don't want to have any chametz in the house, period. Oh, what if something gets stuck, and gets lost, gets this, gets that? Let me tell you what I do, and then you can discuss other options. In our house, what we do is as follows. In a normal Shabbos meal, you slice challah at the beginning of the meal, and it's on the table the whole meal. You have challah with the soup, and challah with the fish, and challah with the liver, and challah with everything. Challah at the end for dessert, challah, the whole meal challah. On Erev Pesach of the Shabbos, it's not that way. After we make kiddush, we bring out challahs for everybody. We try to get challah rolls, so they should have to start cutting. Remember the challah roll? And we try to put it on a separate, on a napkin, or in a separate area, etc. And then everyone, we make motzi, and everyone eats up his challah. Eat up the whole challah. Good to the last crumb. Everything. Then, we remove any vestige, any crumbs, any, remove it completely, the table completely clean. And we serve a Pesach-thicker meal, a Pesach-thicker dishes, or paperware for that matter, make it easier. Maybe Pesach-thicker silverware. That goes on Friday night. The same thing happens Shabbos morning. Except Shabbos morning, it's a big problem. It's called shalashudas. The shalashudas is supposed to be eaten, ideally, after noon. After 12 or 12:30. By that time, you're out of business. You can't have chametz, can't have matzah, nothing. As a matter of fact, the Zohar says that shalashudas that week is impossible, cannot be fulfilled, and therefore Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai would say Divrei Torah instead of Shalashudas. So the Hasidim came along, believe it or not, it's not to be believed, The Chassidah took the Zohar, and they said he can do it every week. The Rebbe is up tighter, and then they don't eat Shalosh Shabbos. It's crazy. The many Chassidim, you know, especially with the time, they just don't eat Shalosh Shabbos. Ah, the mitzvah of the Rebbe is tighter. First of all, with all due respect, the Rebbe, Narav Shimon Bar Yochai, as great as you may be. As the Beis Halevi once said, the real Bistag, the Yosh of every Gris, said, listen, the Rebbe says, Tyra, let's assume for argument's sake, he fulfills Shalosh Shabbos. But if I come and I slug up the Rebbe's Tyra, I destroy the Rebbe's Tyra, so there goes the Shalosh Shabbos. You can't destroy a piece of challah fish. You can't upslug it. You can't undo the challah of the fish. Definitely he prefers that to the Rebbe's Torah. That's just a joke. The real reason is that you can't fulfill the mitzvah with Torah. Only on Erev Pesach for that on Shabbos, you can't have bread, you can't have matzah, nothing. So then he said you learn Torah. Not on a regular week. Yes?
Take a mezonos to the Shabbos.
Oh, that's a big question. You have mezonos to Shabbos.
But a mezonos
to the Shabbos. You can have a piece of thicker. That's the problem. Is Pesach thicker cake permissible? Well, if it's potato starch, it's nothing. It's like having apples. If it's matzah milk cake, the major question is, what does it eat matzah milk cake on Erev Pesach? Because it's can you imagine Erev Pesach?
In general?
We can't have chametz in the house of Shabbos. I don't care what any rabbi tells me. I'm not going to allow any chametz in my house on Erev Pesach. I don't care what you tell me. The chametz is getting out of here before Shabbos. Finished. Now what do you do about Shabbos? What do you do about the meals? So the Rosh said do the egg mat. Egg mat. What's a scoop of egg mat? Egg mat is made with apple juice. There is no water. could eat Agmata on Pesach. What's wrong? Minhag HaRama is not to eat Agmata on Erev Pesach. Or on, excuse me, not to eat Agmata on Pesach. Why not? Well, we're afraid that instead of having pure apple juice, we're mixing apple juice in with water. And if you mix his apple juice in with water, then not only can it become chametz, but it will be called mimaher lahachmetz. It becomes chametz in less than the magic number of how many minutes? 18 minutes. That's not right. It's a universal Ashkenazi custom not to eat egg matzah and pesach unless someone is old or sick or too young or no teeth. Into this nation. The Moshe, no problem. Have egg matzah Friday night. Have egg mats again Shabbos morning until 10 o'clock. So I've been two suitors with egg mats. What about Shalosh Shuddas? May you use the egg mats at 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock for Shalosh Shuddas.
Some say on Erev Pesach.
but it's no karetz, even though it's a prohibition after chatzos, so we pass with the Torah prohibition. There's no karetz, so we can be lean and eat egg matzahs all the way up until sunset and Erev Pesach. It's sunset, yes.
If egg matzah, we're afraid it might become, it was on Pesach, so you can't really use it. You have to, should you do it like you do the rolls, like totally separate? Because you don't want to mix it with your...
I don't think I have to go that far.
It's not like something like... Because you're saying if you can't eat on Pesach, so, but it's not the same...
Not the same as bread.
Okay. Well, I know that's bread, but like you don't want to mix it.
Yeah.
Should you eat
shalom
in the morning?
Oh, so the minute which is quoted Mishnah, the poskim is that they have three sudas, but the last suda, at least the bread aspect, the challah aspect, or the egg matzah aspect of that last third suda is completed before the end of the fourth halachic hour. This requires a little alacrity. You see, you can't eat one meal right after the other. Because if you have a meal and you bench and you wash immediately thereafter, many poskim say it's a bracha she'ena tzricha. It's a bracha for no need. And therefore they're very upset with this. So they say, all right, wash, bench, take a walk around the block, learn the Perek Mishnayis, get it off some politics. Go to the bathroom, do some chazar and chumash with the children, whatever they be, and then go back to wash some of later. There should be a break in the action. Break in action takes extra time. You have to finish already, at least the chumash part of the second, which is the third meal, shalosh shuris, before, let's say, 10 o'clock. And you got to daven before that. And Shabbos is a long davening. So when do you start davening? 6:30. You finish by 8:15. No speech. Finish 8:15. Be home by 8:30. Have your first meal. So we usually have the first meal we have, let's say with the fish. The fruit with the fish. Takes a half an hour. Sing a little smiris, bench, ever goes through the fur wall, goes to learn, goes around, walks on the block, blah, 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 blah. Whoops, half an hour later, come back, time for shalosh shuris. Now it's only, it's 9:30, let's say. So we wash, have a kazayas of challah, quickly put all the, finish every last crumb, whatever we can, just throw it, put away. And then we have our next meal, which consists of the chicken and the kugel, the peso dika kugel, potato, what else? Potato kugel. And the ices for dessert, the peso dika foods. Yes? Oh, that's the problem. Shalosh shuris really has to be afternoon. So the answer is, we're not sure who's right on the list. See, we're not sure. Some say shalosh shuris must be in the afternoon, so you're wasting your time to have it before 12 o'clock. Others disagree and say, yeah, it's better afternoon, but it's not so bad in the morning. So it's better this than nothing. You can't win. It's better to try to protect yourself as best as possible. Yeah?
What do you do
with
the
jazz? Eat it. Eat it. You can flush down the toilet, I guess, if you have nothing else to do with it. But you can't keep it on pace, that's for sure.
Is that equivalent to beer?
Okay. Shulchan Aruch writes here in Tav Mem Hei, doesn't say you should eliminate, but they didn't have toilets though, they didn't have the way to do it those days. Yeah. sure what people say, that's a question. That's a simple thing. That did it. All right. The Shalosh Shul is very complicated on Erev Pesach, which falls on Shabbos. Some say that a person can fulfill the mitzvah of Shalosh Shul on Shabbos afternoon with Knedlah. Even though Knedlah are made for what? From matzah veil. But since it's cooked in water, boiling water, it loses its status of matzah. It's called matzah mevushelah, so you would not be able to use it for the Seder night. And therefore, it's considered to be proper to use that on Erev Pesach in the afternoon. Not everyone agrees. Some say even though it's cooked, it's not, it's a problem. Yes, I'm listening.
Going back to the egg
matzah,
so those have three egg matzahs.
Oh, it's funny. The ideal should be use egg matzah and Erev Pesach in the afternoon, right? It's such a good way to fulfill the mitzvah. The question, what's the bracha on egg matzah? It's another issue. Some books say egg matzah is mezonos. You have a whole problem what to do. My opinion is that egg matzah and the bracha here is about oils. If you want to know why, to tune in next term. Next term we're learning tefillah? Is this tefillah out yet? No? But when it's learning tefillah, it's going to really start with brachas. Brachas is part of tefillah. So I'm just going to put you on comic attractions. But it's a funny thing. When it came to eating egg matzah for the Shalosh Shulas and Erev Pesach in the afternoon, both Rav Soloveitchik and Rav Moshe, the father of the brachas, were against it. Two opposite reasons. Rav Moshe was afraid that maybe you should consider it to be chametz. Rav was strict to consider it to be chametz, and that stricture begins even on Erev Pesach in the afternoon. The Rav was afraid that it's matzah. What is matzah? Because the Rambam says that the only matzah which is disqualified for Pesach night, called matzah ashira, is only if it's made with the officially recognized drinks. The Olympics are the officially recognized drink. What is it? Not Coca-Cola, not Pepsi-Cola. There are four officially recognized drinks. Aside from water. Yad Shachat Dam. Blood we don't use. Contrary to the blood libelers. We don't use blood for our matzahs. And water, or dew is the same as water. We again would not use in egg matzah. So at least four. That's a total of seven. The mnemonic is Yad Shachat Dam. Yud is Yayin. Dalet is Dvash. Shin is Shemen. And Ches is Cholov.
What was the...
Wine, honey, oil, olive oil, and milk.
What were the first
three? Officially recognized drinks.
And the first three were blood, water, and...
The last three that we don't use. His test is do, dal is dam, blood, and mem is water. We don't use water with do because it's egg matzah, we're afraid to mix it with the apple juice or whatever, maybe. And blood we never use. Oh, Hashem, this is for all false libels. Never been used.
The water we don't use?
No. And our matzah, we really use water. Water only. But in our egg matzah, according to the Rambam, if you have what we call egg matzah, you can use that matzah for the Seder night because there's no officially recognized drink in it to make a matzah ashira. It's called matzah ani, it tastes delicious, it has eggs. It's still considered, according to the Rambam, to be matzah. So the Rav is afraid of matzah, Rav Moshe is afraid of chametz, and some say, you know, for anything. They use it for their shalosh shulas in the afternoon. But our custom is not. Okay, in that kind of a year, when Erev Pesach falls out on Shabbos, when do you burn the chametz? You have left over chametz, when do you burn it, when? What do you say?
Friday morning.
Friday, of course. But Friday morning, even though technically speaking you can do it Friday afternoon, you don't want to differentiate between one year and the other. What about the Biur Chametz? When does that take place? That's the Shabbos itself.
What is?
Excuse me, I'm so sorry. The Bittul. What about the Bittul? That's done on Shabbos afternoon itself. Shabbos, make a mistake. Shabbos morning. Shabbos morning before 11 o'clock. Or thereabouts.
The fourth hour?
During the fifth hour. Leave your chametz in a garbage dump. The rule is, if it's not on your property, and it's not in your property, on means location wise, it means your garbage can, it's neither nor, then it's alright. What I tell people to do is take big plastic garbage bags, put all the chametz there, and put it in front of their property line, beyond their property line. That's okay. After it.
So you can leave it out. You know the garbage man comes in there. You can leave it on the curb.
Try very hard that the garbage sanitation in Brooklyn and Butter Park, I mean about every year, they manage to convince the sanitation department to collect the chametz there and pace it in the morning. Huh? Where else? Well, good for you. Riverdale is no such luck. They just come whenever they please. Maybe you should try harder.
What about in Israel?
Here's what they probably get into common air pace kind of
point.
What
is it? It's no longer yours.
No, but people have a problem when they do with it. Where are you going to put it?
If you put it on the curb, you don't own the curb.
Put it on the curb, but then the problem is when the raccoons come and open it up and you have bread all over
the
place. No, pace, you know. This is not nice. To put it in a public garbage can on a tape, I think it's illegal. I think it's illegal. Otherwise, they will take his dog off and put it to the public. It's only for like, you buy ice cream and throw out the wrapper. That's what it's for, those things on the street corner. They don't want to take your whole big garbage can and put it in there.
It's halakhically okay, but it's not legal? Or?
It's illegal. It's not a good idea to do it if it's illegal. Last year, what I did was, what happened was that it was chametz left over in shul, so we don't know what to do with it. Maybe from the house, we found an apartment house a few blocks down that had 25 big garbage, black garbage cans, you know, the black garbage. What they have after they do things, compacted, whatever they do now. They put out these, you must have seen them. They have 20 big bags. Right into the garbage, they go, pick it up. So there was 20, we made 21. That's all. But even that, I felt a little bit guilty conscious. Yeah, I mean, I got more modest stick garbage on there. I mean, even though they're not doing anything about it, they're not going to know what to live to think of, but the garbage man, who would have to do it anyway, in a different block, try not to have anyone we'll see what we're doing. What's this? Come there, take the garbage can, put it in there. adding up the number 21 to the original 20. That's what we did last year. We got nothing left to work on. What if the terrible thing happens? You find chametz in your house and face it. Uh-oh. If it's chalanoid, throw it out immediately. If you have a fire going, burn it. If not, just throw it out the window. Just get it out. Just out, out. Throw it down the incinerator. Out. If it's yontif, you can't move it. It's mukzah. What do you do with it? You cover it with a pot, with a dish, until nightfall. Then you get rid of it.
When you say throw it out, does that mean not on your property?
Right.
And this is more than
kazayas? Less than kazayas, it's probably not a problem. Yes? Wheel pumps. Wheel pumps. You know, the truth is nowadays we all do a bit of comments. It's not really yours. No violation of by your mother. That was the basis of my previous answer. Nonetheless, the pulse of saying is get rid of it. Yeah? That's the problem. If I sell that comet to a guy, what right do I have to throw the stuff that I find out, that I find comets under my table? I sold it to a guy, I'm stealing from the guy, how can I do such a thing? The answer is as follows. Although we do write into the text of our document that we're selling all comets, no matter what, we're selling everything. Nonetheless, there are poskim who maintain that if I put my chametz away in a particular location and identify the location, that's a real great sale. But if I just have a sort of a casual phrase, I'm including all chametz, wherever it may be, that's a much weaker sale. If I don't know it exists, how can I sell it with my what we call das kinyan? I don't even know about it. So it's a matter of dispute. Since it's a matter of serious dispute, the best thing to do is throw it out. I am stealing from the guy? No. That is only if the person is what we call makbi. I mean, he's upset. I take your pen and throw it out the window, I steal it, but then you're upset, so then I'm not allowed to do it. But if you, let's say, leave, I don't know, you leave toothpicks around. You don't care about these toothpicks. You don't care, so I can take it and do what I want with it. It's not called, there's no, it's not makbi, I don't care. It's not considered to be an isek zeil. Here too, we know that John Brown doesn't care about the peanut butter sandwich I found to my horror underneath the bookcase on Pesach. What does he care? So it belongs to him, so I threw it out. So what? If he wants the chametz, I won't charge him for it. That's all it means. Yes?
The way till
after the second half. Okay. Chametz on Pesach is more strict than all other prohibited foods. And that means in the sense that even one minuscule crumb of chametz, which is mixed in on Pesach into a large pot of food, the entire pot is awesome. Called chametz b'pesach b'mashu.
What was the
mashu? Mashu, mem shin hei bav. Means even the smallest amount of chametz and pesach falls in on pesach prohibits the entire mixture. If it fell in before pesach, then it's batel b'shishim.
If a crumb fell in,
crumb or any other amount less than 1/60, it's okay. Batel. Oh, that's the question. Need it an Arab Pesach in the afternoon? Or can you even eat it on Pesach itself? We'll see that just in a minute. Could be. The Shulchan Aruch writes in Siman Tov Mem Zayin, Sif Dalet. If the chametz is mixed in before Pesach and it's bottled with shishim, two opinions. Right now we say it's bottled. Erev Pesach, if noon you may eat it. But on Pesach itself, when the chametz is b'mashu, do we say that since this crumb has been nullified, it remains nullified? Or do we say that the chametz wakes up again, chos evanir? It's mashu. Two opinions in Shulchan Aruch. And we follow the strict view when it comes to what we call lach balach. I mean, it's all a big mixture. Wait a second. We follow the more lenient view. I'm sorry. Did that wrong? We follow the more lenient view when it comes to lach balach. That's why you try to buy all products. All products which are not, which are under, unofficial hashkafa. Like, they send all the books. You probably have Blumenkind, I think, allowed to do this. Orange juice, apple juice, orange juice, you can buy plain orange juice, plain, regular products of this nature. You keep saying, but buy it before Pesach. In case, chas v'sholem, there was a bit of chametz mixed in, it should become bottled b'shishim before Pesach. And some authorities maintain, it's not bottled b'shishim until it reaches the hands of a Jew. So you buy it before Pesach begins. That's what the Poskim say, you should buy Erev Pesach like a milk. Hear that expression? The Poskim discuss the question of milk. Egg is maybe something a little marshal mixed in. I'm mistaken, one of the milk factories. B, maybe the cow ate chametz. Right. And eggs too, the cow ate chametz. So then what you're eating is the product of the chametz, indirectly. So to obviate that problem, it's recommended to buy up your eggs and your milk for Pesach and Erev Pesach. Growing up with big, cartons of eggs and buying loads of milk. That's the minute. Yes?
You only come into the problem with the whole mixture becoming chametz when a piece of some chametz falls in on Pesach?
When falls on Pesach, it's all over. Forget it. Throw it out.
Right.
If you tell them before Pesach, then there's a dispute. Whether we say, okay, it's bottled before Pesach, it remains bottled. Or should we say, no, it was bottled, now it wakes up all over again. That's a matter of dispute. And the Rambam is lenient for lach balach, which means it's all one big mixture. That's why I recommend you buy things before Pesach begins, yes?
Okay, two questions. First of all, if you do throw some comments into some advice and a mashu on Pesach, are you Aser Bahana with it also?
Yeah.
And also, do you have to then throw out the pack?
Could be. In some cases, throw out the pack. Some cases.
Throw out the pack? Or just call it back
to this? Right. Throw it out. You use it for Shavuos, Sukkos, Shabbos, but it's not for
Kashrut.
What can you do with that?
Sorry?
What can you do with that?
What?
It's not coming to the pack.
Oh.
But the
path's
yours.
What's wrong with that? Oh, thank you for reminding me. Chametz may not be owned on Pesach by a Jew if it exists in real life. You can see it. Chametz which is absorbed in a pot or pan, you're permitted to keep it, that pot and pan on Pesach. Don't sell your pots and pans to the goy. If you do, what happens? Terrible, the cannon all over again. Don't throw it out. Put it away. Don't sell it to a guy. It's a new chumah I've seen recently. They sell the chumah which is absorbed in the pot to John Brown. Now, come on. John Brown is very creative and cooperative and imaginative and helpful. He's going to want to buy the chumah which is absorbed in the pot. How do they extract from the dog account?
I'm sorry, you can't take it out of the
pot. I don't think I have to sell it. I don't think I can sell it. I don't like it.
So the guy technically can't walk away with, let's say, your microwave that you like. You don't sell your microwave?
Now, you have chavash with bottle b'shishim. There's no issue what we call chomet sha'avar olav ha-pesach. That's the next topic. Chomet which is owned by a Jew on Pesach is prohibited to any Jew in the world after Pesach as well. That's only if the chomet is in a significant form and percentage. If the chomet is considered less than 1/60th, then there's no, even though it's also the mashu, but it's not prohibited after Pesach. Right. Same thing is true if it was overall about Pesach in pure chametzik form, and it was subsequently mixed in after Pesach. Once again, Shulchan Aruch said it's butl b'shish. The only time that a prohibition of chametz after Pesach is when the chametz on Pesach was owned by a Jew, either in pure form or in more than 1/60 form. Now we get to some of the nuts and bolts of Chomet Shaul of Pesach and Mechiras Chomet. Now, a person may give Chomet, either sell it or give it to a guy who is out of his house before Pesach. Even though you know the guy won't touch it, to watch till after Pesach, and I'll give it back to him. It's still moving. As long as you give it to him as an absolute gift, or sell it to him in an absolute sale. Not a sale which is conditional. You may even tell the guy that if you want, he'll buy it. If he wants, he'll buy it back. If you did not sell your chametz, and you found chametz after Pesach, forget it. You have to throw it out. Even though you did bittul. At first, and if you did bittul, it's not your chametz, it's chametz of a guy. So why does this prohibition exist? Well, the rabbis were afraid. If they wouldn't introduce this prohibition, a person would not be mevatel in chametz before Pesach. But have chametz in your own on Pesach. And now suddenly he's worried about it. He'll say, well, I was mevatel it, come on, nothing. So to prevent this from happening, we say, it doesn't matter. Even if you really were mevatel, you can produce eight of a video, whatever you can produce, it's no good. The chametz is still prohibited. So, rise the Shulchan Aruch. We'll come back to the earlier part. The last thing he's worried about, a very serious problem. If there's an animal, you allow your animal to be fed chametz by a goy. The answer is no. And then we have a pet. What do you have?
Fish.
Dog. Parakeets. We got them all in this little room. Okay, we got them all. Try to provide your pet with non-chametz products. Matz is fine.
Can you?
Give a shvur matz if you want. $10 a pound. That's Yeah.
If you sell your pet, let's say, and then the goy says you, can you feed it for me? Like the goy says, can you feed my pet?
You forget it.
You can't feed it for
the goy. No way. Can you sell your pet to a goy? Now that the goy's pet, the goy will see, sell the pet, will give the pet chametz. Only way you can do it, and even now you really shouldn't do it, you're stuck, is to sell the pet to the guy and give it to the guy. Not keep it in your house. Give him the whole cage, the whole everything. The whole tank, I don't know, you can carry it out. Can't keep it in your house. Give it to chametz. Impossible. Okay, let's go back to the sale of chametz. This is a little tricky. If I remember, I'll bring some forms. You should see what they look like. Out of my house. I remember. Write it down. I said 1 in 100 chance. So, how do you do it? Maybe you once said, you know, maybe your father once came up from shul and said, today I sold the chametz to the rabbi. That is a colloquialism. It's an inaccurate statement. Rabbis don't buy chametz. Rabbis sell chametz. Rabbis are agents appointed by the people in their communities to sell the chametz on their behalf to a non-Jew. Shulchan Aruch had said that the chametz should not be in a Jewish person's home. It should be out of the Jew's home. We satisfy that by renting the premises to a non-Jew. So it's in premises which are officially the non-Jews. You rent it from us. What's the reason why we insist that the chametz be in a non-Jew's home and not in a Jew's home? What's the reason for it? There are two reasons. One reason is, we mentioned before, that if the Jew is in any way responsible for the chametz of the non-Jew, then it depends. If it's in the Jew's house, it's a problem. If it's the non-Jew's house, it's not a problem. And even though the document will state that the Jew has no responsibility, nonetheless, if the chametz is going to burn down over Pesach, and the guy's going to come back to the Jew and say, you give me my money, you make good my loss, it's not going to be so easy for the Jew to squeeze out of this one. So there is some measure of responsibility despite himself. So to account for that possibility, we insist that the food be taken out of the Jew's home. We accomplish it by renting part of all to the God. That's reason number one. And reason number two is that reason number two is in order to be able to effectuate the mechira. We shall see soon that every single means of sale between Jew and non-Jew was controversial. We keep trying and trying and trying. So many methods that one of them should work. One of the methods is, two of the methods relate to the fact that the guy owns the property on which the chametz is found. It helps to effect the sale to him. important point before I manage to read. Very important. If you put your chametz in a room and lock it up, and there's no access, this undoes the entire sale. You must provide the guy with access to the room where the chametz is found. Either give him the key, which I don't recommend, take everything, or you find a place where the key, where you can pick up the key, and go together to the house with the responsible person. In my Mechiras Chametz form, if I remember, I'll bring it, the special provision, if someone's going to be away for the entirety of Pesach, he writes, keys can be found at blank. What was the king of it? It makes a very, I won't use the word mockery, but a near mockery of the sale. How can he get in? So, how much you lock him out? What kind of sale is that? Yeah?
To give him your alarm code?
These days, houses have alarm codes. But I recommend you don't give the key either. Give the rabbi the key with the alarm code. Hope he won't steal your blind. I carry around a bunch of keys on Pesach. This key, this his key, his key, his key, his alarm code. I have people give me their car keys with their car alarm codes.
And if you don't, then the whole sale.
Well, see, the sale can be good. How can the sale be good if you lock them out? What kind of sale is that? You don't have to give them 24-hour access. I mean, no one has that. But that has to be there part of the time. Yes?
Can you give your neighbor your key?
Sure. That's right. Tell the neighbor, give the neighbor the key. And say, if John Brown comes with a piece of paper, please go in with him into my house. Let him in. Jot down whatever he's taking. So we'll know if to pay, so to make a reckoning. Why not? You want to tell him to come back tomorrow. Man required to give him access to all 8 days. 4 is enough. 3 is enough. Yeah, you should come in there.
Let's say you can't get into your building because of the security.
How do you sell your chametz here in the Stern College dorm? They locked the whole building. Imagine John Brown, I just got a picture in my mind. He comes at 34th Street. Call him by Pesach. I don't know, is anybody there at all? Probably a guard downstairs. Is anybody there in Pesach? The whole building is locked, it's not even there. But this building is probably open, huh?
Probably not.
Yeah, sure it's open.
For what?
We're calling sure. This building here. Sure it's open. No, sure it's open.
So they have the keys to the door.
Yeah, so come in. Come to the security guard.
But you have to tell John Brown.
Say, I'm John Brown. Say, I'm Jose something or other. Who are you? Well, I see here, I own the chametz in Brookdale Hall, room 10C. Say, oh yeah. So,
You have to tell the guy, like, where he can find your key, who has your key, and who has,
yeah,
like,
okay.
You have to go that far with it?
The key, you can have it, but how is it to get to the building? That's the problem. Some of Torah, right? Blau said you shouldn't sell the chametz uptown dorm because of that reason, you can't get into the building. Get rid of it. That's what someone told me his name. I haven't checked for the reason. Makes sense. Can't get in. Can't get in. Come in, get in. You know, you've been making up phone calls. Look, listen, after my comments. If you don't like them, they'll come. So we'll figure out a way. Call me. I tell them to call me my name here. Draw a message. Now, once the guy acquires the rental, acquires the rental right to the room or the places, this automatically gives him the ability to acquire the chametz in one of two ways. Additional ways. One, what's called chotzer. If they strike oil in my backyard, it belongs to me. And two, that was called agar. You can transfer movables incidental to real estate. My man loves every year we go through the same deal, that real estate's the main thing, and then movables are not so important. He always smiles very broadly. He's a real estate agent. Finally, the document is signed. The document can also help effect the rental. The document is given to the goy, to the non-Jew, with his signature in mind, together with all the inventory sheets, which have the signatures of the respective parties who want to sell to the goy. And the deal is done. finished, done. Great business. There are a number of other details concerning this which I can't go into, but I have to go. So if I remember, next time I bring some forms, so we'll discuss some more.